The following program is produced and paid for by Temple Emmanuel.
I'm proud to be a Jew, but that's way too Jewish for me.
Shalom, and welcome to the Two Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning is Sarah Lefton, founder of the innovative website Godcast.com. We'll also have a visit from our Mevina on Jewish ethics, Amy Hirschberg-Letterman, storyteller Jordan Hill, and our expert on the international scene, Tom Price. Please email your comments to us at TwoJewishRadio@yahoo.com or visit us on the web at TwoJewishRadio.com. Two Jewish is sponsored this morning by Temple Emmanuel, a Reformed Jewish community for all of Tucson. Call 327-4501 for information on Arizona's finest synagogue, the only full-service Reformed congregation in southern Arizona. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Two Jewish.
Shalom. As some of you may have noticed, last week the federal government sued our state of Arizona, where I live, over the SB 1070 immigration law that makes it a crime to be an illegal immigrant in our state and requires officers to determine the immigration status of people they stop for any other offense based on a reasonable suspicion that they might be illegal immigrants. There are already a slew of lawsuits challenging our Arizona law, and the weight of the Justice Department participation that arrived last week was expected for some time. Still, it should give pause. The argument that the feds are making is that this new law essentially amounts to one single state creating its own immigration laws, its own foreign policy, if you will, which is a power reserved to the federal government. It also contends that the law will divert federal agents and resources to people who have committed no crimes and will also cause detention and harassment of authorized visitors, immigrants, and citizens. All of that bad. While the majority of Arizonans seem to like this law, the truth is that it will do not much to deter illegal immigration, but it has done a great deal already of damage to our state's reputation and economy. I'm no expert on the American legal system, although I do know a bit about Jewish law. But it seems clear to me that immigration is not the responsibility of the state, and that the correct course of action on any kind of immigration reform has always been to try to influence the national government to come up with comprehensive reform. That was John McCain's idea not too long ago, before he started running for his life and airing ads to just finish the fence. He was certainly right in those days. You know, back when he thought an intelligent, coordinated approach to immigration was the right way to go. In any case, this becomes a Jewish issue only because we probably know more about immigration than any other people in the history of humanity. And the one thing I can promise you is at the heart of Jewish law, Torah, and ethics. We are supposed to have one law, the same law for the stranger, the immigrant, and the native. One set of rules for everyone. We're commanded to remember that we were strangers in a strange land, to recall that we ourselves were immigrants long ago and quite recently. The idea of a law deliberately singling out people because they might be in the country illegally, of subjecting them to what amounts to public humiliation on the grounds that somebody thinks they might not have the right papers, is just so spectacularly anti-Jewish that it deserves to be addressed. This is fascism, and a very nasty bit of business. It is a shanda. Actually, this law deserves to lose in court, which I believe it will, and get reversed, hopefully, before it can even become a bad law. Well, to play us in this morning on a happier note, here's a cut from Safam about having a positive mental attitude in spite of all current conditions.
Took his boy to mountain climb. Wife thought it would give them both a chance to have some quality time. Isaac volunteered to carry the knife, the rope, and the firewood. That's a man with confidence and a positive mental attitude.
It's all right now.
Looking at the way we live.
All right.
I don't should be so negative.
It's all right now.
Always look for what is good.
It's all right.
With a
a positive mental attitude. Israelites were in the desert. Soon they started to complain, reminisce about the old days when they were the Pharaoh's slaves. Moses found the quick solution. Give them water, give them food. Stop the clutching with the use of a positive mental attitude.
It's all right now.
Looking at the way we live.
All right.
Ah, don't you be so negative.
It's all right now.
Always look for what is good.
It's all right.
With a positive mental attitude. You don't need no marijuana to impress your loser friends. You don't need the latest fashion or drive a Mercedes Benz. A mental attitude.
It's all right now.
Looking at the way we live.
All right.
Ah, don't you be so negative.
It's all right now.
Always look for what is good.
It's all right.
With a positive mental attitude.
That was Safam bringing us into the morning with a positive mental attitude. When we come back on Two Jewish This Morning, our guest will be Sarah Lefton, founder of the innovative and fun website Godcast.com, which brings the Torah to the internet in a streaming video kind of way. Find out what that's like when we come back on Two Jewish.
Safety. It's a word we take for granted at home and at the workplace, but sometimes safety isn't a sure thing. Environmental Strategies, Inc. is an environmental remediation company that's been promoting safe living in Arizona since 1989. Environmental Strategies specializes in asbestos and lead abatement, mold remediation, and industrial cleaning. In addition, they have a building and remodeling division that makes it convenient for clients to get all their services from one contractor. Environmental Strategies jobs range from seam tape removal in a single-family home to insulation removal in a Challenger Learjet aircraft and everything in between. So, if you're in need of asbestos or lead removal, mold remediation, industrial cleaning, or top-notch general contracting services, call Environmental Strategies today at 884-1114. Estimates and bids are free and confidential. Ken Goodman is the president, and he'd love to talk with you about your project. Environmental Strategies, serving all of Arizona since 1989. Call 884-1114.
Chardonnay Shabbat is here. Friday night services were never this fun before. It's a loaf of good bread, a jug of excellent wine, and you, and a delightful way to begin your weekend with Sabbath fun and friendship at Temple Emmanuel during our summer Chardonnay Shabbat evenings. Join us for Chardonnay Shabbat at Temple Emmanuel every Friday night this summer. We start with a wine, cheese, and fruit pre-owned egg Shabbat reception at 5 p.m., followed by fun, musical, one-hour Sabbath service at 5:45. Celebrate summer with Chardonnay Shabbat. There's no charge or obligation. Just a lovely way to begin the weekend at Temple Emmanuel. Temple Emmanuel is centrally located at 225 North Country Club Road between Broadway and 5th. Call 520-327-4501 for more information. That's 327-4501. Or visit our website at templeemmanueltucson.org and join us on Friday nights for Chardonnay Shabbat.
We're delighted to welcome to Too Jewish our guest this morning, Sarah Lefton, the executive director and producer of Godcast.com. That's G-D-Cast. She began her career in educational digital media at NYU, went on to produce projects for the New York Times on the web, The Village Voice, Princess Cruises, and several robotics companies. You might have heard about a social media avalanche she created for NutsOnline.com to save Jericho, a well-loved but ultimately unsuccessful CBS drama. We welcome to Jewish, Sarah Lefton. Good morning, Sarah.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So what is Godcast and how does it work?
So in short, we're trying to fix a problem, which is that if you ask your average Jewish teenager who, say, Holden Caulfield is, or Captain Ahab, or any number of classic characters from literature, they can answer the question in, you know, no time flat. But then if you turn around and ask those same teens, or really adults for that matter, who Ruth was, who Joseph was, who Rabbi Meir was, you know, they draw a complete blank. Since I come from the media production world, it seemed like, well, maybe I could use some of the tools that I'm familiar with working with and that I know that today's teens respond really well to, you know, their own language of short videos, animation, funny music videos, those kinds of things, and apply that to raising basic Jewish literacy. So Godcast is a media production company devoted to just that, raising basic Jewish literacy through short films and in the future, hopefully games.
Now, obviously, the challenge of doing Jewish education in an interesting way, making it relevant, has been around for a long time in America. Do you think there's something inherently different about videos online, about the online interactive experience in the way that we educate kids and makes it more attractive, more effective?
I think, well, so Godcast is part of a long line of Jewish innovation through media. I mean, we stand on the shoulders of great projects like Torah Ora, which made sort of a comic book video versions of the Parshas and other projects like that. What's different and very exciting about Godcast and some of our peers out there today is that the distribution is so much easier and faster and cheaper, in many cases free. In the past, if you wanted to see Jewish media in a classroom, you sort of had to work through the educational distribution system, and you probably needed to be part of a Sunday school system or a day school system somehow. Godcast, you can just access right on your own, right on the web, and a lot of the great Flash game content that's out there or iPhone content, you literally can just download it yourself. So if you're an adult or a parent, or, of course, a teacher who wants to use this stuff at home or in the classroom, you can just access it by yourself, oftentimes without paying a dime for it. So that's really what I think is new.
We will talk much more with Sarah Lefton, the executive director of Godcast and an innovative voice in Jewish education, when we come back a little later this morning on Too Jewish.
Taste of Judaism has everything you ever wanted to know about Judaism, but were afraid to ask. In three upbeat, fun, free, informative sessions, Taste of Judaism brings the joy of Jewish life and learning to you. You'll study with outstanding rabbis, including Too Jewish's Rabbi Sam Kohan. Learn what Jewish values, spirituality, and community are all about, and have a great sample of delicious Jewish foods. Classes are offered at various times at four Tucson locations, Temple Emmanuel in central Tucson, on the northwest side, on the east side, and at Tucson Hebrew Academy on River Road. And all classes are open to everyone, Jewish or not. Best of all, Taste of Judaism is free. For the first time this year, we're offering a Taste of Judaism family class. Come with your kids and have them enjoy finding out what makes Judaism fun, meaningful, and creative. There's no charge, but you must pre-register by calling 327-4501. More than 3,500 students have taken Taste of Judaism. Why not join them? Everyone's invited, Jewish or not. No fee, no obligation, just great instructors, free food, fun, and a wonderful introduction to Jewish life and learning. Call 327-4501 and ask for Mila to register for Taste of Judaism.
If your parents or other loved ones are in need of assisted living, consider making the choice that Dorothy Daniels' family made, Handmaker.
Living at Handmaker does make me feel very independent, like I was still in my house. The best part of it is I don't have to clean it.
Assisted living at Handmaker promotes an active and independent life. All needs are met, including weekly housekeeping and linen service, transportation to doctor's appointments, restaurants, banks, and shopping. And living at Handmaker is fun.
Every 2 weeks, there is a man who comes with a saxophone, and we dance. And I love that because I love to dance.
Handmaker is centrally located on Rosemont, just south of Grant, and includes 1- and 2-bedroom suites and cozy studios with patios and balconies.
I would recommend Handmaker to anyone because I feel very safe and secure here. The people that work here are very nice, considerate, and that means a lot.
For a tour and consultation, call 322-7035 or visit their website at handmaker.org.
If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, kvetch or akvel, please email us at tojewishradio@yahoo.com, T-O-O Jewish Radio, or call 520-327-4501, or visit our website at tojewishradio.com. You can also get CDs of all past and present shows through the website, or downloading us there, or at the Apple iTunes Store as popular podcasts. It's the baseball All-Star Game this coming week, so in honor of that exhibition extravaganza, here's Mandy Patinkin's Take Me Out to the Ballgame in Yiddish.
Ballspieler, es passt nicht als ein Verspiel, weil sie sehen zwei, drei Spikes neus bei der Baseballspiel.
You know, I don't know how many of you are baseball fans, but you would have to be one to have heard about a story that broke this week, a college ball player who put together a near-record hitting streak. To be honest, unlike college football or basketball, not even hardcore baseball fans pay much attention to college baseball. It's considered a kind of tune-up for the best of the players for the major leagues. And since most of the best prospects actually go straight from high school to minor league ball, well, most of us baseball fanatics don't follow college baseball. In fact, although I personally, religiously, Jewishly check the box scores every morning of baseball season, I did not even watch my own alma mater, UCLA, lose the NCAA baseball final to South Carolina a couple weeks ago. But there is one college baseball story well worth following, especially here on Too Jewish. Back in February, a lightly regarded sophomore infielder on the Florida International University baseball team, Garrett Whittles, blooped a bunt single. The year before, he had hit 250, so nobody was expecting much this year. But Garrett Whittles kept getting hits. Every game, in fact. By the end of the season, Garrett Whittles had hit in 56 straight games. That would have tied Joe DiMaggio for the Major League record, except he plays in college. The record there is 58 games, held by former big leaguer Robin Ventura and set back in 1987 when he was in college. Anyway, Whittles' team, Florida International, was eliminated in the playoffs. But his streak stands, and his pursuit of the record will continue when he returns to college next year. By the way, this year, Garrett Whittles hit a cool 420 in compiling that 56-game streak. Well, the fun fact is that Garrett Whittles is Jewish. His dad is an orthopedic surgeon in Miami, and like most high-level Jewish athletes, Whittle doesn't wear his Judaism on his sleeve. But baseball is a game of superstitions. And so, before every game, Whittles kneels in the outfield and recites the Shema, the Jewish prayer declaring the unity of God. He also wears a mezuzah, which has the Shema in it, and on road trips, he brings a copy of the Tefillat HaDerech, the Jewish traveler's prayer. During Pesach this year, he tried to keep kosher for Passover, even on the road, says his mother. His mother, by the way, Lishka, is a member of Miami's Juban, or Cuban Jewish community. Her family are Sephardim from Turkey. So, while kneeling down is not actually the right way to say the Shema, maybe Whittle should have gone to religious school a little longer, you're supposed to stand or sit, not kneel, it seems to have worked for him. I'm not sure that a 56-game hitting streak is the direct result of saying the Shema and wearing a mezuzah, but why not? It's been a good week for Jews in baseball. Former Two Jewish guest Ian Kinsler made the American League All-Star team, too. Anyway, best of luck, Garrett Whittles. Keep saying the Shema, and early next NCAA baseball season, you just might go into the record books as the all-time hit streak holder, Jewish or otherwise. We welcome our expert on Jewish ethics, Amy Hirschberg-Letterman. Good morning, Amy.
Good morning, Rabbi.
You know, we started talking a couple of weeks ago about Shabbat and the ways that Shabbat, the Sabbath, can bring kind of a moral quality to the day, an ethical sense for that 24-25-hour period.
There's so many ways and actually rituals that help us keep in mind and in front of our thinking and our attention, the notion of living a moral, ethical, and a life really devoted to God on Shabbat. And we have so many beautiful rituals and traditions that are not just, I think, meaningful, but really fun to introduce into a family setting or a Havarah setting, a group of friends. You know, we talk all the time about tzedakah, about the obligation, the duty to give based on the notion of justice. But, you know, many families, without even realizing it, miss an opportunity to create a sense of tzedakah in their home by not putting out a pushki or a tzedakah box. We used to call it a pushki when I was little, where the parents and the kids can empty their pockets of any change or make a conscious choice to put a piece of their allowance in right before lighting the candles on Shabbat. You're not supposed to actually be, handling money on the Sabbath traditionally, but it's a wonderful way to really start the Sabbath by taking time to put some money aside and then know that your family has started the Sabbath by a charitable act of giving tzedakah. In our family, we used to do that, and then right before every Rosh Hashanah, we would get together and we would kind of vote on where all the change in the tzedakah box from one Rosh Hashanah to the next would go to, where we would distribute it to. So it was kind of a fun thing, we looked forward to it, and the kids would come up with their ideas, whether they wanted it to be the synagogue or the Humane Society. I mean, it varied depending on where everybody was at points along the way. But that's a beautiful tradition. And another one that I think...
Maybe they should have had a synagogue at the Humane Society.
Well, that would be good, but, you don't want to start mixing dog and God.
Well, I don't know. I mean, you could have a bar mitzvah then.
Well, they say your bark's worse than your bite.
Yeah, that's true.
I don't know.
Okay, moving on.
Okay,
sorry about that.
So the thing about Shabbat is it also gives us an opportunity to praise the family, and particularly the wife or the mother, and that is through Eshet Chayil, a woman of valor, which is just a beautiful poem, Proverb 31, that really expands upon the beauty. You know, a woman of valor who can find her price is far above rubies. And just that the poetry alone in those two lines, I think, pretty much sums up the role and the value that a woman held in the eyes of our not just our sages, but the Jewish tradition. And it's a beautiful time, Shabbat, to stop and tell each person in the family how much you value them, why you're so grateful that you're in the family with them, what you love about them. I mean, that's just another way with your children to expand upon their blessings, is to really share with them what you appreciate about them. So I really encourage families to take a look at the Woman of Valor, take a look at blessing your children as a way to bond as a family, but also to really stop weekly and appreciate who each individual is in the family and how we all work together.
It's a great thought and a great way to make Shabbat not just sort of a technical observance, but something that integrates real family traditions into a meaningful and ethical day.
Yep.
Thanks, Amy. We'll talk next week. Take care.
Bye-bye.
When we come back, we'll hear from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price, from Two Jewish Storyteller Jordan Hill, and get the old Jewish joke of the week. We visit weekly with the outstanding restaurateur, Janos Wadler of Janos Restaurant at the J-Bar. Good morning, Janos.
Good morning, Rabbi.
Janos is the finest restaurant in the Southwest. J-Bar are the most fun in all of the Southwest, I'd say, but they're also great places to hear music in the summer.
I think that's one of the things that makes J-Bar and Janos so fun in the summer is the summer music series. We have music every Wednesday and Thursday night out under the stars. And it's a really busy time, a really fun time for us, and great musicians, but local musicians who also tour all around the world, and we get them at J-Bar.
You can sit outside, look at the stars, eat great food, have a drink, and just enjoy the summer with the summer music series at Janos and the J-Bar.
And I'll see you there, Rabbi. Give us a call, 615-6100, and we'll have your table ready for you out under the stars listening to the music.
And eating and drinking. What's the website?
www.janos.com. The full summer music schedule's on the web.
JNOS.com. Thanks, Janos.
Thank you, Rabbi.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
There have been some interesting resolutions passed in the European Parliament, in New Zealand, that have essentially made it illegal to slaughter animals by following kosher practices, that is to practice shechita. And these laws have been promulgated on the basis of supposedly or perhaps humanitarian grounds. This isn't an entirely new problem, but it's a new face to that problem. If you want to have kosher meat in just a lot of places. Let's talk about that a little bit.
Well, I'm not actually familiar with the new law in New Zealand or with recent developments in the European Parliament, which is an institution that causes most Europeans to roll their eyes. But I do know that, for example, in Switzerland, which is a country where Jews have long enjoyed relatively good treatment and a relatively comfortable status, shechita has always been illegal from the constitution, the basic laws of the Swiss Confederation. And some people cite this as evidence of fundamental anti-Semitism in Switzerland. Others cite it as evidence of the Jews' sort of chronic failure to explain their beliefs and practices well to their fellow citizens.
As though kashrut was an easy thing to explain.
Right, since no two Jews have the same definition of what's kosher anyway, it's hard enough to get Jews to agree on what kashrut is, never mind trying to make non-Jews understand these bizarre laws and practices. But that having been said, the Swiss Jewish community has always solved this problem by having butcher shops or kosher grocery stores or whatever that simply import the meat from Germany or France, where shechita has been legal, and there are lots of kosher butchers, and it hasn't been a problem. If the European Union declares shechita illegal throughout Europe, it becomes a much bigger problem, because then you have to bring the meat from either Israel or the U.S., and then it's probably frozen and no longer fresh, and people who really care about their food, which is true of many Europeans in a way that Americans find difficult to comprehend, will start getting up in arms, and it will be a disincentive to keep kosher, or, for that matter, to remain in those countries in Europe. I mean, there's all kinds of questions this raises. I think part of the problem is that it doesn't seem necessarily, unless you really go into all the details, some of which are pretty gory, that the kosher method of slaughtering an animal is the most humane, although for thousands of years it certainly was, and arguably it still is. But in any case, it's our method. It's our law. It's what the rabbis have decreed. And so we're kind of stuck with it, no matter what parliaments may do. Parliaments can also unmake laws. So perhaps with a little bit better PR campaign, Jews can get some of these rulings reversed.
Who knew that we would need better PR? I mean, I thought we kind of invented that field.
Good question.
We will talk next week. Thanks, Tom.
I look forward to it.
And now it's time for the old Jewish joke of the week. Jewish humor, your Bubby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Too Jewish as a Public Service. Rabbi Levine stops at the cathedral to visit his friend Father O'Reilly, who is hearing confession. Suddenly, the priest is called away for an emergency. Not wanting to leave the confessional unattended, he asks Rabbi Levine, "Can you cover for me?" The rabbi says, "I don't know what to do." The priest tells him, "Just listen to the next confession and do what I do." So the rabbi comes into the confessional with the priest. A few minutes later, a woman comes in and says, "Father, forgive me, for I have sinned. I committed adultery." The priest says, "How many times?" The woman says, "Three times." The priest says, "Say three Hail Marys, put $25 in the collection box, and sin no more." "Huh, this I can do," the rabbi thinks. "Okay, Father, I got it. Go to your emergency," he tells him. A minute or two later, a man enters the confessional. He says, "Father, forgive me, for I have sinned." Rabbi Levine says, "What did you do?" The man says, "I committed adultery." The rabbi asks, "How many times?" The man replies, "Three times." The rabbi says, "Say three Hail Marys, put $25 in the collection box, and sin no more." Not hard at all. A woman enters and says, "Father, forgive me, for I have sinned." The rabbi says, "What'd you do?" The woman says, "I committed adultery." The rabbi asks, "How many times?" The woman says, "Once." Rabbi Levine is startled. This, he doesn't know how to answer. But, resourceful as ever, he says, "We have a special this week. Do it two more times and come back three for $25. That was the old Jewish joke of the week. Special feature of a special this week just for you on Too Jewish, You Should Live and Be Well. We welcome our Too Jewish storyteller, Jordan Hill. Good morning, Jordan.
Good morning, Rabbi. So once there was this old Jewish man who was sitting on the sidewalk of his town, and he was sitting there mourning and crying and quelling, and he was covered in ashes. And this other Jewish man walked up to him and he said, "No, what's the problem?" And the man on the ground said, "Oi, it's my son. I raised him to be such a good Jewish boy. And he converted to Christianity." And the second man who had just showed up, he said, "Funny you should say that. But my son did too." And so he joined the first one. And now the two of them were sitting there mourning on the side of the road, throwing ashes on their head, crying and quelling and looking to God, saying, "God, why? When another man walked up, and he asked what the problem was, and the two of them, they said, "Oh, it's our sons. We raised them to be such good Jewish boys, and they converted to Christianity." And the third man said, "Huh, funny you should say that, but my son did too." And so he sat down, and there were three of them now on the side of the road, covered in ashes, crying and moaning and praying, why? When all of a sudden, the heavens parted, and God appeared. And God said, "My children, I have heard your cries, and I want to know what is the matter." And the three of them, they looked to God, and they said, "Hashem, oh, it's our sons. We raised them to be such good Jewish boys, yet they converted to Christianity." And God looked at them and said, "Funny you should say that." The end.
Thanks, Jordan. We'll get another story next week. And now a word of Torah. This week we begin reading Dvarim, Deuteronomy, final book in the Torah. The name Deuteronomy captures a midrashic explanation of the essence of this final sefer. It means a repeated text, which in Hebrew is called Mishneh Torah. This reflects the fact that the whole book of Dvarim is a few long sermons by Moses, recapitulating events and commandments established over the previous three books. Not bad work for a man with a serious speech impediment, huh? A word about language in Dvarim, which is appropriate since Dvarim means words. The Hebrew of this book is extraordinary. Terse, strong, muscular in quality, carrying a sense of great purpose and power. It has the unmistakable feel of a true literary masterpiece, and the language conveys Moses' message of God's explicit direction as clearly as any text in Torah. Sometimes the medium is the message, and it proves to be so here in the book of Dvarim. The narrative of Deuteronomy begins at the end of our journey, the Israelites' journey, to the borders of Canaan, the Promised Land. Moses informs the people of Israel that he has now led them for 40 years, as though they might have forgotten that, and that they now have come to a place and time of great importance. One of the first incidents he recalls goes back to the time when the Israelites were beginning to get organized, and Moses himself had just appointed judges and magistrates to help him with the needs of the people. Moses remembers the instructions he gave those leaders. Be fair and absolutely even-handed in dispensing justice. Do not favor the rich. Do not favor the poor. Show no partiality, but simply seek that which is just and right in the world. This is, of course, just the beginning of Moses' long orations, his last hurrah, so to speak. Although he is now, by biblical calculation, 120 years old, though his control over his people has waned, though his speech is tinged by the bitter knowledge he will not get to enter the Promised Land, still, he teaches us, yet again, the greatest lesson. For we Jews must be pledged to create in this uncertain and even unjust world acts and systems of ethics and justice. What greater calling can any people have? When we come back on Too Jewish in a few moments, we'll get the news of Jews around the world and talk with Sarah Lefton, founder of the website Godcast.com, an animated online version of the Torah that makes Jewish learning relevant for everyone. Find out how when we come back on Too Jewish.
When you're looking to buy or sell your home, you probably want Tucson's best realtor on your side. That realtor is Jill Rich. As real estate values change, it's comforting to know that Jill Rich knows Tucson's real estate landscape. She follows the trends. She knows the neighborhoods. She even knows how to help you find financing. But most importantly, Jill cares. It doesn't matter if you're looking for a starter home or a castle. It's like having your bubby in the realty business. For sellers, Jill will develop a personal marketing program that'll sell your house fast. There's no one who knows Tucson real estate better. You can reach Jill Rich at Long Realty's River and Campbell office. Call 349-0174. Jill Rich, providing strong representation in a caring way. Call 349-0174.
We continue with our Too Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
In a sit-down meeting at the White House last week, President Barack Obama met with Israeli Prime Minister Bibi Netanyahu. Unlike Netanyahu's last visit to Obama, this time he got to go through the front door, and photographers were encouraged to shoot the laughing, smiling duo. Both participants were clearly projecting the message that everything is hunky-dory between America and Israel, and the U.S. and its closest Middle East ally are on the same page. In terms of my relationship with Prime Minister Netanyahu, I know the press, both in Israel and stateside, enjoys seeing if there's news there, Obama said. But the fact of the matter is that I've trusted Prime Minister Netanyahu since I met him before I was elected president, and have said so both publicly and privately. The meeting capped months of tension between the countries, sparked by Israel's announcement back in March of a major housing start in East Jerusalem during the official visit to Israel by Vice President Joe Biden. While there were no concrete steps taken on new agreements, the Israelis were very pleased over the president's approach to security. In a statement, Obama said, "The U.S. will never ask Israel to take any steps that would undermine its security interests." He was referring to his administration's efforts to get more countries to abide by the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. Israeli officials have raised concerns after a U.S.-hosted conference back in May concluded with an agreement to consider the issue of Israel. U.S. officials said later the issue should only be considered subsequent to a comprehensive, permanent peace, which is Israel's position, too. The U.S. and Israel have a long-standing and very quiet agreement to maintain ambiguity on Israel's nuclear capacity. Israel maintains, is believed to maintain an arsenal of about 200 nuclear warheads. Netanyahu thanked Obama for reaffirming the long-standing U.S. commitment to Israel on matters of vital strategic importance. Especially impressive for the Israelis and the pro-Israel lobbyists was how Obama framed the announcement. We strongly believe that given its size, history, the region it's in, and the threats leveled against us, against it, Israel has unique security requirements. It's got to be able to respond to threats or any combination of threats in the region, and that's why we remain unwavering in our commitment to Israel's security. Israeli officials were also pleased with the U.S. efforts to push back pressure for international inquiry into the flotilla raid that left 9 Turks dead, including one Turkish-American citizen, by the way, and which has disrupted ties between Turkey, the U.S., and Israel. And finally, Netanyahu was pleased by the Iran sanctions Obama shepherded through the U.N. Security Council, as well as the congressional sanctions that became law last week. I think that the latest sanctions adopted by the U.N. create illegitimacy, create delegitimization for Iran's nuclear program. And that is important, Netanyahu said. The sanctions the president signed the other day actually have teeth. They bite. In a bit of continued fallout from the so-called flotilla incident, actors Meg Ryan and Dustin Hoffman have backed out of attending the Jerusalem Film Festival. Ryan canceled her appearance the day after the Gaza flotilla incident. Cinematheque Associate Director Yigal Molad Chayo said Hoffman broke off negotiations too, which had reached an advanced stage the day after the incident in which Israeli Navy commandos boarded the Gaza-bound vessel, trying to break the maritime blockade, resulting in the death of 9. While neither actor said explicitly that the flotilla incident was the reason, it became quite clear that that was so. In addition to the actors, Prince Albert of Monaco canceled his participation in the Jerusalem Film Festival, which began last week, runs for another week or so. The film festival is scheduled to have a tribute to actress Grace Kelly, the prince's mother. In an odd story, a reclusive Russian Jewish mathematician turned down a $1 million prize for solving a seemingly unsolvable math problem. Grisha Perelman told the Russian news agency on July 1st that he had turned down the prize for solving the Poincaré conjecture from the Clay Mathematics Institute in Cambridge, Mass. The problem hypothesizes that any three-dimensional space without holes is a sphere. Apparently not. Perelman reportedly said that he disagreed with the organized mathematics community and believed an American mathematician had contributed to solving the problem and he hadn't done it alone. Perelman originally reported in 2003 he solved the problem. By 2006, scholars worldwide agreed. He was awarded the most prestigious award in mathematics, a Fields Medal, from the International Congress of Mathematicians in Madrid. Perelman, a recluse who by then had quit his job in Russia, moved in with his mom, did not show up for the awards ceremony. And Jack Abramoff, the convicted lobbyist, has a new job. He is now working for a Baltimore kosher pizza restaurant, having been released from jail. If you remember, back in 2005, he went to jail for corrupting, among others, Representative Bob Ney of Ohio, former Deputy Interior Secretary J. Stephen Griles, and several Capitol Hill types in a huge corruption scandal. And that's the news of Jews around the world. We're delighted to welcome back to Two Jewish our guest this morning, Sarah Lefton, the creator of Godcast.com, the executive director and producer as well. She's an expert and an innovative one in educational digital media, particularly in Jewish educational digital media. She served in a variety of capacities in the commercial world and then went on to work for a JCC and in a variety of Jewish projects before moving on to Godcast. Sarah, do you think, in view of the tremendous technological influence that Jews have had in all of the new media environments, do you think that the institutional Jewish community has been quick or slow to embrace the use of new technologies for Jewish education?
You know, it's really an interesting question because, you know, I live in San Francisco, which is, you know, a stone's throw away from Silicon Valley, which is the center of technology change pretty much the world over, except possibly for Israel, which has given it a great run for its money lately. And everybody down there is Jewish. Everywhere I go in the valley, everybody is Jewish. So, you know, people of the book are all over the internet as well. But yeah, to your question, interestingly, there has not been a lot going on in this space. There's a lot of talk all of a sudden lately in the last couple of years. But, you know, really 5-6 years ago when I first started hatching this idea and I looked around, I saw almost nothing. And I can tell you from talking to teachers, I mean, most of them don't have internet anywhere in their synagogues, you know, let alone in their classrooms. So even if there were great interactive teaching tools for them to use, most synagogues don't have them. So, I mean, that's part of the problem is that without the infrastructure, how can you even start to use the content? But in recent years, there's been a lot of excitement around this area, a lot of high-level conversations going on in the institutional world, conferences popping up, day-long conferences here and there where leaders in the space are talking about these things and trying to learn from their peers in the business world, and some new innovation funds from more old-fashioned philanthropic organizations are being targeted at technology. So I think you're going to start to see tons of new stuff over the next year or two or three.
Sarah, you received a grant from the Joshua Venture Group, which is a fellowship for Jewish social entrepreneurs. Very interesting. What is a Jewish social entrepreneur?
There's lots of ways to talk about social entrepreneurship. I think it's taking the principles of business and applying them to social change. You know, looking out in the world, I saw something I really wanted to change, something I had a lot of passion for, which was raising basic Jewish literacy. So I then look back to my business training, a lot of which I'm learning right now from folks like the Joshua Venture Group, and sort of applying old-fashioned ideas about business to that.
Tell us what your latest projects are.
Right now, we're in the middle of what I call Godcast, the Holidays. That's our new series. Last year, we completed Godcast, the Torah, which was 55 episodes based on the Parsha HaShavua. So now we're working on the holidays, and we are doing pieces about 8 of the holidays. We already launched Hanukkah and Pesach pieces. You can find them at Godcast.com as well as on YouTube. And so right now, we're working on pieces for Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, and Sukkot, with some musical guests, which is pretty exciting. And like all Godcast episodes, those will be accompanied by teacher's guides, which are available for download from our website. We are also working on an internationalization project. I hear all the time from folks all over the world, wow, it would be great if these episodes were available in, you name it, Spanish, Russian, Hebrew, Hungarian, I heard yesterday. So we're in the middle of doing this. We first completed transcribing all of our existing work and creating English closed captions for them, which you can already find on YouTube. So moving forward, we're in the midst of translating all of this into 5 languages right now, Hebrew, Spanish, Russian, Italian, and Hungarian. So that's happening. We've almost just wrapped our DVD version of Godcast the Torah. So that's going to be available to the public and to educators in just a few months, along with a bundled, published version of our curriculum guides. Looking forward from there, our sort of longer-term goal is to finish animating the entire Tanakh, the Hebrew Bible, by the year 2014. So we're just starting to plan our work with the books of the prophets. We have some pretty exciting ideas about how we're going to be animating the book of Joshua, which is the first thing you'll see from us, hopefully, by this winter.
So how do people go about getting Godcast products? Do they just download them? How does it work?
At our website, godcast.com, that's G-D-C-A-S-T, the Parsha of the Week is always there streaming from our homepage. And then there's an archive on the site. You can see a little thumbnail of each episode, and you can watch the entire Torah portion cycle for the year there. And that's always available, always free. There it is. If you like to look at media on the go on your, you know, iPhone or what have you, you can do that via YouTube. All of our episodes are also available on YouTube. So, again, you just go to our website, and it will redirect you to the right YouTube video. We're also on Facebook, facebook.com/Godcast. And Twitter and all these other websites as well. So you can keep up with us in any of those ways. And on our website, you can join our weekly newsletter mailing list, where we'll remind you on Friday. We'll sort of send you a warm Shabbat Shalom email and say, hey, this week it's Parsha Matot Maaseh, and here are the two episodes you can watch, and with links back to those videos. So that's a great way to stay in touch with us as well.
Do you think that electronic media and social interactive media will ever replace, you know, good old regular religious school?
Well, for one thing, I see it as kind of a supplement to what's going on in school already. We really envision these shorts as trigger films for discussion at Sunday school or at day school. They're a really great way for a teacher to kind of wake up a bored class, get a good conversation going. Lots of times we zoom in on parts of the Parsha that kids haven't thought they would think was interesting, or we'll take some text from the Torah that seems very dry when you see it on the page and bring it to life in some pretty surprising ways.
Let's go back a little bit in time. What is it that triggered you to get deeply involved in the Jewish world? As you mentioned, you don't have a super strong Jewish background.
Yeah, so I truly, truly believe that people who are very passionate about what they do in their careers usually are responding to something that was missing for them at some point in their lives. For me, that was really a strong Jewish education. I grew up in kind of a Jewish vacuum in the suburbs of Columbia, South Carolina. There was one synagogue, and we were all
I know that
sleeping
synagogue.
Through.
I was the rabbi in Spartanburg, South Carolina.
No way!
Yeah. Way, dude. I was,
so you know. So
I do
you
know.
Know,
and I know the Columbia congregation. I know the rabbi who was probably your rabbi growing up, too.
Great. So, you know, they did what they could, and my parents worked really hard to get us exposed to as many Jews and communities and learning as they could. But, you know, as you know very well, there's not that much going on down there. So, you know, we went to camp, but there certainly was no day school opportunities. There was no Israel trip in my community. So none of that stuff was really available to me. So what I did come out of childhood with was a very strong Jewish identity, very, very strong. An attachment to community was very important to me. But it wasn't until my 20s when I sort of got reinterested in my Jewish community and in Jewish roots that I started going to synagogue from time to time and feeling kind of dumb, like I couldn't keep up with the conversations other people were having, and that if I went to a class, an adult education class, I didn't know what people were talking about, and I felt a real lack. And so what I started doing in my early 20s was honestly overcompensating, taking as many classes as I could, reading as many books as I could, looking for information online, and there really wasn't anything. When I lost my job in 2000, which was in advertising in New York, I was looking for something new to do. I was aware that there was this whole world of Jewish nonprofits, and I heard through the grapevine that there was an opening for a marketing director at Camp Tawanga in San Francisco, and I thought, well, that's great. I know a lot about marketing. I know a lot about digital technology, websites, DVDs, all this stuff. Wouldn't that be fun to apply that to the Jewish summer camp world? I went to Jewish summer camp. That would be amazing. And I got the job, and it was a perfect match in terms of needs. Camp Tawanga needed, you know, a website and needed a DVD and needed all these things. And, you know, they were still using slide projectors to do talks to parents about camp. And I really needed a way to sort of start solving the problems that I experienced as a child. And through my work at Tawanga, I got familiar with just how many kids and families out there are pretty alienated from their roots and from their communities. I worked especially with a lot of what we call underserved communities. And I just got more and more familiar with what was missing, not just for me, but for, you know, millions of kids. So as somebody who worked in digital media, it just became like more and more apparent to me that this is what I was supposed to be doing. It took me a while of experimenting with different things, with JewishFashionConspiracy.com, with volunteering at the San Francisco JCC, was doing work with all different kinds of organizations before the pieces kind of fell together and Godcast started happening.
If people want to find out more about Godcast, go to g-dcast.com to download all kinds of information. I want to thank Sarah Lefton for a great and illuminating visit here on Too Jewish. Thank you so much, Sarah.
Thank you so much.
When we come back, we'll hear about next week's guest and get a final musical play out on Too Jewish.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Next week, our guest will be Sarah Hurwitz, the first ordained Orthodox woman rabbi in America and probably the world. Play out this morning comes from Israeli singer Pini Cohen, Shabchi Yerushalayim, Praise Jerusalem. My friends, have a great Sunday morning and a Shavua Tov, a week, we pray, of peace.
Shabchi Yerushalayim.
The preceding program was produced and paid for by Temple Emmanuel.